Hey, everyone, and welcome to the New Visionary Podcast, a podcast for artists who are ready to reach greater heights in their art careers. I'm your host, Victoria J. Fry, founder of Visionary Art Collective and New Visionary Magazine. Join me for inspiring conversations with some of the most inspirational visionaries in today's art world. Let's jump in. Welcome back, artists. Today, we are chatting with Christina Massey, a New York City-based visual artist and independent curator. Christina is a mixed media artist working in abstract botanicals using repurposed materials. And Christina was also the curator for our recent issue of our magazine, our women's issue of 2024. So that I had to add that in there because that was such an exciting moment for us. Christina, welcome.
Thank you. It's so good to be here. And thank you again for that opportunity. It was so much fun.
Oh my gosh. It was such a special issue. Your curation was beautiful, such an incredible and diverse selection of artists. And also we got to interview you for the magazine. So it's just like, yeah, it was amazing to partner up with you in that way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I love that you're bringing in different voices all the time for the magazines. And it's just a great way for artists to be engaged, meet other people, meet curators, get their work in front of people. So applauds to you for what you're doing too.
Thank you so much. And you're doing incredible work. I can't wait to dive in. And yeah, I think with the magazine, I knew from the beginning, like I didn't want it to just be my perspective over and over again. I think the beauty of having guest curators and having you curate was like, we get to see what you are interested in. And, you know, it's like that comes through. And I don't know, I think that's really beautiful and really powerful. So anyway, we're going to dive in. I have so many questions for you, but I want to start by asking you a little bit about your journey as a visual artist. Can you just tell us how that started and how it's evolved?
Oh, sure. I feel like in a way, I've had a very typical path and a very untypical path. I came from a family that's not particularly an artsy family. You know, my dad was a high school math teacher and my mom was a part-time nurse, and it was a small little town in California. And there wasn't even a gallery nearby. There wasn't no art community whatsoever. But yeah, I was just this kid that could draw well. So from a young, something that's really beneficial about growing up in a small town like that is it gave me opportunities quite young. From about 14, I had businesses saying, hey, why don't you paint a mural in my restaurant? Or, you know, getting hired to do different things like that. Or a lot of like drawings of portraits of people's kids, because you get labeled as that kid that can draw. So that was really my introduction to art, was this very kind of small town development. But when I went to college, I really got to dive in a little bit more into actual training on how to paint and sculpt and all those good things. But really, really wanted to live in New York. I just couldn't afford to go to school here. So as soon as I finished up my BFA, I literally packed up two bags, moved here, and have been hustling since to build my career to where I am today. So I feel like it's a typical story and a not typical one at the same time.
It's so cool. As you're describing it, I'm like, oh my gosh, you were an entrepreneur at like an early age.
I think it's part of like, you know, you get opportunities sometimes that you wouldn't have otherwise. What's the saying, you know, big fish in a small pond type thing. So the things that were hindrances, the fact that there wasn't really any art community or anything, kind of created new opportunities in a way that certainly shaped me. So all those things end up developing who you are and how your work develops. And, you know, everyone's a little bit different. It doesn't have to be the strict, you know, go to this particular art school and hone the skill and then do this. You don't have to do that particular path. I've known great artists who really started their art careers well after having a whole nother career. So I think everyone's got their own journey.
Absolutely. And I've really come to see, like, realize that I think over time and through the podcast, because we have so many artists join us and I have so many conversations with artists, and I've realize like, oh my gosh, everyone's path is different. And sometimes there's some similarities, but for the most part, there are so many different ways to be an artist and there's not one journey, and it's not always linear as well. Like sometimes we,
yeah,
yeah, artists will pursue a career, or they'll go to art school and then kind of work on other things or raise a family and then return to their art career. So there's so many different ways. But yeah, okay, so you came to New York. How was that? Like a small town in California, coming from a smaller town in California to New York City, what was that experience like?
Oh, and yeah, to add to the craziness, it wasn't even a year after 9/11 had happened yet. So the city was in this immense state of grief and recovery. And I mean, I didn't know anybody. So that's kind of did everything you're not supposed to do, right? You're not supposed to come with no connections and no savings and everything. But I was just determined to try. And, you know, I called my first year my hazing. It was not only really, really challenging, you know, in terms of like, here was like, oh, I have all this experience. I've been working since I was 14 years old. You know, that didn't matter when you got here. What mattered was who you knew and not the experience that you brought to the table. So that was a real eye-opener. And it was very challenging to get just kind of like those first jobs. I changed jobs, I don't know how many times in that first year. I had all kinds of horrible apartment issues I had to deal with. But, you know, you stick it out. And on top of like my first like true real winter. So that's what I mean by my hazing. New York made me work for it to stay here and eventually got my feet under me a little bit more. But it wasn't immediate for sure. It wasn't like I walked in, was like out of a movie. Oh, here's this artist. Wonderful. We'll give you opportunities. No, you had to do a lot of hard work just to get your foot in the door, especially when you don't have somebody like cracking it open for you. You have to really knock on a lot of doors to get that crack. Yeah.
Totally, totally. It sounds like, yeah, it really broke you in and it's an intensive experience. And the fact that you wanted to stay, you know, I think speaks a lot to, I guess, your love of New York. I think it's such an amazing place. And I personally can't imagine living anywhere else, but I know that it can be extreme. And it was, I kind of had not an opposite experience, but I came from New York and lived out in California for 5 years, which also was like a total shock to my system. It was just the way of life was so different. And ultimately I realized I'm a New Yorker through and through, but I appreciated California so much.
Sometimes it's hard to believe it's the same country. They really are different.
Yes. I always say like when I landed in California, I actually felt like I was on another planet because there were plants I had never seen. I didn't even know existed. It was the craziest experience. It was so different and the energy was so different and just the vibe. But yeah, one of the questions I had for you was like when you moved here and you were, you know, those first few years where you were just hustling and figuring it out and I'm sure experiencing so many different things. How was it with making your work? Were you still able to make your work? Did you take a break? I found for me, actually, like after art school, I moved out to California pretty much right away. And I don't know if it was being in an entirely new environment, but it was actually harder for me to make my work for a little while. It took me some time to get back into a practice. So how was that for you?
It went through stages for sure. Like most kids, when you get out of school, you're going to have a full-time job to pay your bills. You know, your art's not going to pay your career immediately unless you're incredibly lucky. But, you know, so you're balancing work or looking for work. When you're young, also social activities are much more important, you know, and all those things you have to kind of factor in. And I ended up finding a job that I worked nights mostly. And, you know, when you're in your 20s, I think these things are easier to do. So I did a lot of like window displays in the windows around New York City. And that allowed me to then work on my work during daylight hours. And I found a little shared studio space, which was ironically cheaper in Manhattan than it was in Brooklyn. And what was wonderful was that it was a shared space, so the costs were really low, but almost nobody else used it, or at least during the hours that I was. So it felt like I had this big, beautiful studio to myself, and it allowed me the space and time that I needed to really just dive into making. Because like I said, I came with two bags. I didn't bring all my stuff with me. And then on top of it all, the stuff that I had in California in storage was damaged in a flood. So I really just needed to, if I wanted to be an artist and have work to show people, I needed to make it. I didn't have work from college to show anymore because it had all been destroyed. And so I just put my head to the ground and just did it. And I survived off of very little sleep in those early years. But it allowed me that flexibility that I needed. I could still participate in artist talks and openings, and all of that would be just kind of before I would have to go to work. So I got to just kind of immerse myself in the experience. And I started even like New York has so many wonderful free opportunities for artists. Something I highly recommend anyone to do. It doesn't matter what level you're in your career, but most of the colleges have free lectures, free visiting artists that you can go listen and speak or listen to them speak. You know, maybe they have a book out or something. You can go to a book signing or something, but there's all these wonderful ways to educate yourself and immerse yourself into that kind of culture without having to actually even pay the bills for that college. And so I would do that. I would hop around to different campuses. That's a funny slip. to the campuses, and I'd go to events on campus and just meet other young people who were trying to make their careers in New York. And it really made a huge difference. But I think when you're first starting, you just have to find a job that allows you that time in that space. And just know that your time's going to be balanced in a different way than you will be later in your career.
Absolutely. I think that's so fascinating. And I'm like, I'm learning so much about you. This is so cool. I love learning the artist journey. It's like my favorite thing because I don't know, it's so unique to you. And I think it helps us to understand like who you are and to like, not just who you are, but like how you came to be the person you are now is what I mean. And how you kind of got here. Cause I know that you've had so many shows and so many cool things that we'll dive into in a bit. So it's interesting to dial it back and just hear about your very humble beginnings in New York. But also, I think that's incredible that you had, I mean, how amazing to have a studio space that basically felt like your own. You're finding these opportunities. And I wanted to ask you, like, with the actual work you were making, was it sculpture right off the bat, or were you painting, or what did you start making when you landed here, and how did the work change and evolve?
That's a really good question because my work has really evolved over the years. I studied painting. So I was in that painting realm when I first came, and in that mindset, that was the materials that I went to get. That's where I started. But because of that journey that I had where I was changing apartments often, changing jobs often, I found myself having to roll up the canvases all the time and not have them on stretcher frames to not only save space. In California, you could have things on your stretcher and you'd had a little place to put things, not so much in New York. So the canvases became fabric to me in a way. And I very quickly after moving to New York started getting interested in using the canvases more like object. And they started to very quickly, I would sew and stitch into them and become very dimensional. And I think it was just a result of like that practicality that I had to be rolling up the canvas. I couldn't use it like on a flat space all the time. And it started to become very off the wall relief pieces and then literally into installations that would hang from the ceiling. And so it really started to get sculptural very fast. And I think part of that comes from, even though I'd studied painting at the school I went to, you took almost as many courses in ceramics and drawing and printmaking as you did your emphasis. But I also got my minor in theater set design, where I learned a lot of those more sculptural skills there and how to think of things in more of a room and a space and an experience. And so when I came to New York and I'm really living these experiences, I think it was a natural kind of shift for me to bring painting into that realm. But then, yeah, it kept getting more sculptural to where I am now over the years.
Oh my gosh. So it's like it kind of started out of necessity in a way. And then you started thinking about how you could, well, it changed the way that you were viewing the work. And then how did you, where did the, I guess at what point did the recycled materials, the repurposed materials start to come in? How did that shape your practice?
I really kind of started from there. So again, imagine me having to change apartments like 4 times in a year, constantly moving things, caused me to, you know, constantly be looking at my materials in a different way. And I graduated college, 9/11 happened the last year of my degree, and my work dramatically changed when that happened. I felt like the work I was doing before, I just couldn't do the same thing anymore. But it got very, like, it was very flesh tones, very different than what I'm doing now, and very bodily. And at a certain point, it felt like I could go back to having color again. And so color started to come back in, and I was using the materials really in a way kind of going, well, I can't really afford to buy new ones, so I'm just going to cut up my old paintings and start to weave them together, create objects out of canvas, which led itself to really a breaking point was a residency that I had the opportunity to do out in kind of rural Pennsylvania. The work at the time was, imagine my current work, but made more out of canvas. It was getting very heavy. I was getting a little too pigeonholed as a fiber artist, which I love fiber art, but I didn't want to be too labeled in one way. And so I thought, I'm going to take this opportunity to go to this residency and try to make my work, but completely different materials. And I want it to be something that's easy for me to access, because this is in a very rural area where I don't have opportunities to go to an art store. It's going to take forever to order something out there. And the idea to repurpose aluminum cans came to me at that point. And that's what I worked with. I fell in love with it. And it's one of my primary materials now, even though I'll also repurpose plastics and fabrics and still like to use canvas and papers and other things. But the aluminum really, really spoke to me in a way that canvas had really been that place in my heart for as a material before, prior to that. And then the aluminum now, I love how it holds its form. I love that it's, you know, recycled material. It has all these other like kind of conceptual meanings to me that I really enjoy. So, but yeah, it was a residency in the middle of nowhere that caused that change to happen.
That's so beautiful. Oh my gosh. I love hearing that. And I think it is sometimes in situations where you're trying to be resourceful, like, you know, as you were saying, you were going to be in sort of the middle of nowhere. You might not have access to an art supply store. So you're thinking about what resources you would have accessible to you. And I sometimes think that that's actually when the best ideas happen. Like, because,
yeah,
you know,
it's like the kind of.
Yeah. I think that sometimes for sure having a limitation can be a creative challenge. And that's actually how I try to frame it in my brain. So if I'm ever lacking materials or if I'm out of certain colors of paint that I'm used to using, I also try to think like, okay, well, what could I create with what I have right now? And I've made some of my best work from that. Or if I haven't, it's taken me in a different direction where I'm like, oh, this could be interesting to integrate into my practice later. It's so helpful to push ourselves out of our comfort zones, because I think very easily we can fall into the rhythm and the routine of sort of like creating in the same way that we have. So, and I also think that's the beautiful thing about residencies. It's like a place where you can explore.
Yeah. I'm partial to, like, a lot of the residencies I've done are to intentionally put yourself in a different situation, right? Or learning a new medium or material that may not become like your main thing. But I think I love to continue to learn. And so when I have the opportunity to dive into some other medium, you never know how it's going to inspire you. And some of my favorite ones have been, yeah, like printmaking residencies, that it's still not a main part of my practice, but I just absolutely loved the experience. And you bring all that technique and skill to other mediums, regardless if you end up doing something different. Yeah,
totally. Because it like inspires a new way of thinking. And I find that too. Even I was watching a video, it was like an interview this weekend with an artist who is a conceptual artist, and I wouldn't describe my work as highly conceptual. And her work is very, very different than mine. But even just the way that she approaches her work, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And I wonder if I could maybe bring that into my practice in some capacity. I think just exposing yourself to different ways of making and to also just like hear about the ways that artists are making their work and it's helpful and it does kind of translate over in some way.
Well, I agree. I mean, that's why I love listening to interviews with artists often, because it gives you ideas of like, or even visiting other artist studios and seeing the way that they set up their space. And that's why I love programs like yours, where you're really creating community, because I think there's so much that we learn from each other. And it doesn't matter if, you know, I might work in the abstract realm, but I can learn just as much from somebody doing uber, super hyper realism, you know. And there's different things that we can bring to the table to each other. And I think just having that dialogue and appreciation for the different ways that people work is always a great way to kind of push yourself to. So if you're ever feeling in a rut, it can be like, how's this person deal with this situation?
Totally. I think it's just part of like your creative growth is to constantly expose yourself to different ways of working and different means of creating. It was funny. I was painting this past weekend and I had this moment where I realized that a lot of the way I approach my paintings is so similar to printmaking from like one printmaking course I took in college that I guess just really resonated with me, maybe on a subconscious level. And I was like, I should take a printmaking class. Like, so I started looking into it. And that's also one of my personal goals, like as an artist, is to take some different kinds of workshops and courses just to, you know, I'm like, because I will always gravitate towards taking painting classes or, you know, learning from fellow painters, which is also very helpful. But yeah, I think it's important to just kind of immerse ourselves in different ways of thinking and doing. And yeah, speaking to your point about community, I mean, I have become increasingly more and more passionate about community because it's so powerful. So powerful to be immersed in a space where you can learn from different perspectives and experiences. So, yeah.
I think that's partly why I loved the printmaking residency I did so much, because it's so much more a community. Like printmakers are like, you know, they're using a shared space. It's a very different way to work. It's really
fun. Heard this. I've heard that actually. One of my, well, there's a few printmakers I know or like painters that have roots in printmaking, and they've told me that they're like the sense of camaraderie. It's different because you're in a space, you're sharing material. Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. And actually, speaking of community, I wanted to ask you, how was it finding your community in New York? I mean, at this point, you've been here for, I suppose, over 20 years.
Yeah, over 2 decades. I've been here a long time
now. How was it developing your community?
You know, it was rough at first. I won't lie. I think anytime you're an adult, right, in a new space, it's easy to make friends when you're a kid, right? It's like, oh, let's go out to the swings or whatever. But as an adult, you know, that can be a little bit more challenging. And I feel very lucky that, you know, I went to, you know, what many people might call a party school. And socializing was a huge part of the education. And so I have never felt intimidated to just go to openings by myself, or just, I don't mind going to shows or to open studios. And if I don't know anyone, I don't have trouble picking up just a conversation here and there. So that part comes quite naturally to me. But I think there's still something that just takes time for you to find those people that you really click with and, you know, that become almost like a team for you. It's your art community. It's the group that you often like are exhibiting with. You're showing up to each other's shows. You can say, hey, I'm working on this grant. I'm having trouble with this paragraph. Can you read this for me? You know, those group of people that you just really build a relationship and bond and trust with. And it's changed over the years because I've been here a long time and New York is a transient city. So, you know, there's people who come and go. And I just find that I feel like I've got a really wonderful group right now that, I know if there's ever any situation, I could be like, all right, guys, this is what's happening. I just need some like pats on the back right now, or I need some serious like boots on the ground. I have to be out of my studio tomorrow. Can anyone help me move stuff? You know, like there's, you know, you got to have that core group. But I think if anyone moving to a new city, you just have to give yourself some time to find that. And a lot of people have anxiety or shyness around showing up to events by yourself. And I would just say, at least from my perspective, of course, everyone's different, but I find there's always somebody else in the same boat when you get into the room. So there's always somebody else who's walking around by themselves, and just find that person. And then you got somebody to talk to. So just know you're never the only one in the room who doesn't know anyone. It might feel that way when you first walk in, but there's always somebody else who's standing in the corner just waiting for somebody to talk to them.
Totally. I think that's such good advice too. And it's funny because I just experienced this recently. I was invited to an event in Manhattan and I was very nervous because I didn't know anyone except like the person who was co-leading or co-hosting the event. So I was like, oh my gosh. And I won't really be able to chat with her because she's going to be leading the event. So I'm going to just like be on my own, but I have to go. I really felt like I needed to go and that it was going to be the best thing for me. And I went and I made a friend, and it turned out it was a fellow artist who actually we've both been following each other on Instagram for like years, but I didn't know she was going to be there. She didn't know I was going to be there. And yeah, I think just speaking to your point, like there will always be someone. And also if there's not, I mean, I have been to events where I just kind of experienced it on my own, and that's also safe and enjoyable sometimes. Sometimes I want to go to an event, honestly, and just like, not like have my headphones in, but just kind of experience it solo and really take it all in. And if a conversation happens organically, I'm super open to that. But there's a beautiful thing about just going and experiencing something on your own as well.
Oh, absolutely. There's sometimes, yeah, I love going to museums with friends, but I also just, it is a space I tend to prefer to just kind of go my own pace. And I always think doing the experience is better than not. So even if, and come into it with your own goal. If your goal is to network, then hey, find that person who's also by themselves. But if your goal is just to absorb and learn from the work, there's no need to put that extra stressor on yourself to have to be social.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's such good advice. And okay, another question that came up for me. When you moved here, and so you found a way to make your work while you were also earning a living so that you could, you know, pay your bills, put that money into your art practice and all of that good stuff, and you were building your community at the same time, how was it for you starting to exhibit your work, show your work, find opportunities for your work? What was that process like, and how has that kind of evolved over the years?
At first, you know, again, because I was just so green, I just, you know, I didn't know anyone. So, originally, I really thought I would just kind of go to some sort of grad program. And, you know, that's how you meet people and that's how you get that information, which just didn't become very realistic for me because budget and time, et cetera. But like I said, I found out you could go to all these campus things and you didn't have to pay tuition. So I met lots of other young artists going through the exact same experience, and we would share information. And I had put a goal for myself. I wanted to have a solo show within 5 years of moving to New York. And I left it open-ended with that. Didn't know what it was going to be, but that was a goal of mine. And a really wonderful program for emerging artists was how I got my first show, Shoshama, if you know them. They give free spaces to artists. Yeah. And it was something that I found almost every MFA program in New York, they were telling artists to look into it because it's free space. You could do a show and you could at least get the images from that show to help book the next one, etc. And so I just tried, and not only did they give me a solo show, which was wonderful, but I went the extra mile and wrote my own press releases and so just didn't rely on them to only do the work, but really put in the work and the hours myself and got a review. And they were like, hey, that's awesome. We have another space. You want to do another one? So I ended up getting to do back-to-back solo shows through their spaces within that five-year goal of mine. And that was largely just because, you know, I just put the work in and just didn't sit back and wait for somebody else to bring the reporter to me. I brought the information myself and put the work in to get that done, which I still think they're a fantastic program for artists of all ages. If you just are trying to clear out your studio and you've been working for 20 years. You could do a show of work that's maybe not what the galleries want, the stuff that's, you know, you've just in the last 2 years and you want to show the older work. Like, it's a wonderful way to do that. It's a wonderful way to experiment as well if you're feeling like you have to have a certain type of work for this type of gallery that you might be working with, and maybe you just want to play an installation. You've never done it before. Fantastic way to do that. So I still think that they have a real valuable asset that they provide to artists of all ages in the city. I definitely transitioned from there into the more nonprofit realm. And I think it was really, like I said, once you get in there and you get to have the pictures of proof of, hey, this is how I do a solo show, those images become gold, you know, and you can then go to the next space and it just kind of snowballs from there. And you can start to really build your career and your network to where now it's a combination of me going and looking for spaces as well as spaces coming to me and saying, hey, we'd like to put you in this show. So I think no matter what stage you're in, you're going to have a little bit of both of kind of the trying to go out and make stuff happen for yourself and the opportunities then start to come to you without the effort.
Totally. I think it's all like so well said. It's always a balance of both. I don't think you can ever rely on people just reaching out to you. You do have to be willing to do the work. But also know that I think when you put that energy out there and you're showing up and you are putting in the work, you're attracting opportunities and you're attracting anyone who might be interested in you and your work. Like, it just starts to, you're creating that energy. And I think the more you do that, the more opportunities start to come your way. So whether you're an artist or an entrepreneur or both, I mean, artists are entrepreneurs, but I experience this just with VAC. I'm like, if I show up every day and I hustle and I put things out there, like, I see results from that. But then also sometimes people will just contact me out of the blue, or organizations will just contact me out of the blue. And so it's definitely a thing that happens. And I think, you know, we live in a day and an age now where we have these tools available to us, like social media and email marketing, and we really can take ownership for our art careers. We don't have to rely on anyone. Of course, you can go the gallery route. And I think that's a beautiful thing when you have that partnership and you have a supportive team that believes in your work and believes in your vision. But there's so much you can do on your own as well.
Yeah. And I really think, you know, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine recently who got a really wonderful commission that came in, and she really felt like it came out of the blue. And I was like, no, it definitely did not. Like, you for years have been putting the time in, and they saw your work from all that hard work that you did for years. So it feels sometimes like it comes out of the blue, but it's a result of all that time and energy that you put into, you know, even, it might just seem silly, like a social media post, but that stuff adds up. Yeah.
It does. It does. And it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, when I feel like I hear artists say, you know, this painting or this artwork didn't just take me 3 hours or whatever. It took me like 25 years of training and 3 hours. You know, it's like everything you did, all of your training, all of your experience, and all that you've done up until that point goes into whatever you're creating in that moment. So yeah, absolutely. And I also wanted to ask you, because, you know, as you know, so many of our listeners, our amazing listeners, are wonderful emerging artists and early career artists. And as we're talking about showing your work, finding the right opportunities, putting yourself out there, what advice might you give to an artist who is perhaps at the beginning of their art career and looking to increase visibility and looking to find opportunities to get their work into exhibitions and find organizations that resonate with them and that feel aligned?
I think something that really helped me early in my career, not long after I graduated, the recession happened, right? So there happened to be a lot of things out there, webinars and things really meant for people, not artists, but the idea was diversify, right? Not putting all your eggs in one basket. And that resonated with me in terms of an art career. So kind of like what we've talked about already in terms of, you know, you're putting, you know, proposals out as well as getting those passive things coming in from the work that you've done in the past. But I also mean in terms of like, if you're just starting out and you don't have a lot of connections, you know, you may be dividing your time between doing those networking type of things and building that community, because most opportunities are going to come from people that know you in some way. Put some time into the open calls and the proposals and stuff, but your chances are going to be that much greater with the people that know you. So I would make sure your time is balanced in a way that you're getting the best bang for your buck, so to speak. You know, you're, if a curator recommends you for something, you're going to be one out of 10 compared to one out of 500 if it's like an open call type thing. So, you know, make sure you're making wise choices about where you're putting your time and energy, and really kind of suss out your goals too, because every artist is going to be a little bit different, so that your time and energy is going towards goals that actually bring your career in the direction that you want to go. So if your goal is you would love to get tenure at a university and really have this life work balance between teaching and creating, make sure you're doing things that put yourself in that type of position. If your goal is, I feel like your work is really educational and you want to kind of do like the small museum circuit, you know, make sure you're going, building workshops and building up that side of your career. But I think always diversify where you're trying to get the opportunities from, you know, sales, from shows, from, you know, fairs and all the different things that you have out there. Just make sure that you have kind of like a budget in mind, a goal in mind, and then spend the time that makes sense. Don't spend a huge amount of time just networking if all you really want to do is make work at home, you know? So you got to have the goal should align together. So something I tend to like to do at the beginning of every year, and actually around now too, because this is my birthday this month. But I tend to kind of do a little evaluation of like where I'm at, what's all those things floating in the air right now that I don't know where they're going to land. And I like to rethink about goals, and so that I'm constantly directing myself and energy to the places that take me where with those end goals that I would like to be at.
Yeah, that's such a great piece of advice, because I think that, like, whenever an artist asks me what next steps they should take, I always ask them like, well, what are your goals? Because really every step you take should be aligned to your long-term goals. And it's worth the time to really reflect on what those goals are, because it might be to sell your work. It might be to increase your exhibition opportunities. It might be both, but it might be to have a museum show, but it's getting clear on what those goals are. I love the idea of reassessing goals. I try to reassess every quarter. I'm trying to get better about doing it and actually taking the time, because it's an investment. Like, even just taking a couple hours to sit down and reflect, it doesn't even have to be that long, but it's worth it because there's that clarity that comes through that process. So
yeah. Yeah, it's really easy to get lost in the hustle, right? So mm-hmm. I think it's important, because also your goals change over time. You know, it could be like your goal was to have a gallery representation, and then maybe you finally get it and you have a bad experience. Or maybe the goal was always, you wanted this museum show, and you realize that what the museums are wanting isn't actually aligning with what you want to do creatively. So those goals will change over time. And I think as long as you're putting your energy in a place that feels supportive of the things that you want to achieve, you're going to have some sort of success. So
totally. I think that clarity is everything, because that's going to be what continues to guide you. So thank you for that advice. And I also just wanted to shift a little bit into learning more about your work as an independent curator. How did that journey begin?
That really began, I've told this story before, but I'll say it again because it's still funny to me. I'd had back-to-back studio visits with curators who really gave me kind of like, they were like gushing on my work, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. They love me. And, you know, and, you know, it felt so positive. And then the both of the studio visits ended with, oh, I love your work. This is amazing. But I can't put it into a group show because it's too unique. And I was going, what?
Too unique?
Too unique. I know. I was like going, wait a minute. But isn't that supposed to be a good thing? I was just like blown away. And so I was like, let me just show you how I see my work in a group show. So I just kind of came up with it. It just all came together quite fast. I was like, okay, well, this is a group like of five artists, myself included. This is how I see a show developing and see these relationships. And the director of the gallery was like, yeah, this is great. You're the curator. And I was like, what? And so it just kind of happened. And then I was like, oh, this is really fun. I really enjoy this. And so, you know, I would say the first one's a bit more like organizing, right? Because when you put your own work in a show, it's a little bit different experience than when you're putting in the research and developing a real idea, like the curatorial process, right? But it definitely gave me a taste of what it was. And it's something I highly encourage every artist to try at least once. I think it makes me a better artist. I learn so much from the other artists that I work with that it's an invaluable education. And yeah, I really enjoy it. I tend to do maybe one or two projects a year that I really truly fully research and develop for a long time in the curatorial practice. Or sometimes it's more like during, like, you know, with the open call with the magazine. I love those opportunities because you really get a wider pool of artists that are outside of your usual network. And it's an amazing place to meet new artists. And so I like to mix in those different types of experiences. Kind of the same thing, not putting all my eggs in one basket. I like to mix them up, but it's a wonderful way to have conversations that are meaningful to you that aren't necessarily what your own work is about. You know, I'm very focused on like the environment and the experiences and emotions that come with climate change and different things, but I'm equally as interested in, you know, the politics of women and different things. And it gives me a way to have a visual conversation about a topic that means a lot to me. That's not necessarily something that I'm driven to do in my own work, but is still a topic that can resonate with a wider audience. And like you said, we were talking about earlier, you learn something from every artist. It doesn't matter if they're making work just like you or not. Just even how to label work, how to package work, how to be better at getting stuff to the curators on time, labeled the way that they want, and all those good things that if you put yourself on that other side of the coin, you're going to be like, oh, okay, that's why we have to do it that way.
It's so true. I think that's so cool. And it sounds like it was something maybe you weren't anticipating, but it happened and you fell in love with it and you realized that it actually had such an amazing impact on your practice. And a lot of what you're saying, I can resonate with because since I started curating as well, I noticed that it had a profound impact on my paintings and on my work. And I think being exposed to so much amazing artwork, I was like, oh my gosh, I want to level up the work that I'm doing. I'm curating these shows with like some of the most talented artists I've ever seen. And it was so inspiring to me and motivating. And I think it kind of like, I don't know, lit a fire under me to just think about how I could further develop my own work because what I was seeing was so powerful. And I love what you said about having the opportunity to explore concepts and themes and ideas that you might not be exploring in your own work. I remember one of the first shows that I ever curated was portraiture, and I'm a landscape painter, but it was amazing to explore that topic or just to explore that subject rather, because it's not something I do in my work, but I was getting to sort of like, I don't know, see how all of these artists paint portraits in very different ways and then create a show out of that. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And I think it does influence the work that we create. And yeah, I also would encourage every artist, if they have an opportunity, to try it at least once. It's a learning experience. And it's also so much fun. It's so fun.
It is really fun and absolutely a fantastic way to kind of grow your network. You know, it's a wonderful way to meet other artists. And when you're both an artist and a curator, you become kind of like a double asset to spaces. So quite often I've been asked, you know, maybe they want to curate my work into a show. And then they're like, oh, you also curate. So would you be interested in curating with us at some point? And I'm like, absolutely. You know, and it gives you a wonderful way to incorporate more people into the experience. And those relationships end up being, you know, longer term, more meaningful relationships. So there's a show I have up right now that, you know, there's artists that I curated in the past that I'm showing with, and it's, we're all just like giddy about it. We're like, oh, remember when we got to do this show and how we first met and all that stuff. And it just creates a really, a special bond, I think, when you get to do that. And it scratches a creative edge that you can't do entirely yourself. You know, even when you're doing a solo show, you can have a, you know, your conversation that you're having in a certain experience, but when you curate and you're outside of it yourself and it's really about the other work in this concept, it's a whole nother like level of creativity that is worth exploring.
Absolutely. I think it enriches the whole experience and journey of being an artist. And it's opened my eyes to so many different things that I just didn't even know about. I'm like, I think once I started curating, just speaking to your point of like exploring concepts and themes that maybe you don't normally approach in your work, I found that it got easier and easier to come up with like proposals for shows because I would start pulling from previous shows and then I would like, or I would create a proposal for, let's say, an exhibition, and then it would spark an idea for something else. It kind of reminds me of the art making process, actually. You know, it's like, you come up with a concept or a theme or something you're really interested in, and then it sparks an idea for something else. And you're like, oh, this could be a show later on down the road. And yeah, it's such an enriching experience. And you've done amazing curatorial work. I mean, is there, do you have like a favorite, I don't know, curatorial experience you'd like to share? I'm sure there's been so many.
gosh, there's been a lot of great ones. I think some of the most challenging ones, there was one a couple, it was pre-pandemic for the Biobat art space in Brooklyn. And my studio had been in the Army Terminal at the time, and they really wanted somebody kind of local to curate. And it's this big, beautiful, almost museum-like entry space, but they wanted all the artists to be scientists. And I am not a scientist. And, I roped in a friend of mine, Etienne. I said, do you want to co-curate this with me? Because I'm definitely feeling a little bit out of my realm. And these are, I mean, there's some of New York's top scientists that work in this space, right? So I was like, I really need to make sure that this is not only artistically genuine, but scientifically as well. And it was challenging for that aspect. And I think I had some of the most growth as a curator with that because it was a little bit out of my realm. And so I feel incredibly proud of that show because it was a little bit out of my wheelhouse. And then another one that was incredibly challenging but incredibly rewarding to do at the Pelham Art Center just north of the city when we were closed down in 2020. Two things that got happened. Again, kind of this fun thing where sometimes a space likes you. They'll like, hey, let's give you more than one opportunity. So during the pandemic, I had started this project for anyone to do. And the idea was you just collaborate using the Postal Service to make artwork. And it ended up being this huge thing and showed in many different states. And the very first place that wanted to show it was the Pelham Art Center when they were brand new opening after the pandemic. And they're like, let's do this. And then right after, let's do an all-women show because it was the 100-year anniversary of women getting the right to vote. And I was like, okay, great. So I'm going to plan these two back-to-back shows. It's 2020. People are still like inside, you know, and no one quite knew, like, how can we even hang anything? There's rules about enough people in a space. And so we got a couple that was allowed to be in the space together to hang the show. And we got the artists to all kind of get stuff dropped off safely, like in outdoor locations. And it was like this whole thing. But we ended up being able to pull together a really beautiful show that unfortunately I don't think enough people got to see it because it was the pandemic. But again, it was a chance to have this conversation a little bit outside of my normal realm. It was really important to me and Etty, who we worked together. We wanted to tell the whole story of women and the right to vote and how, yes, it was 100 years for, say, a woman who looked like myself, but it was not 100 years for many women. And there's still women today who don't have the right to vote. So we had a woman who was a dreamer who doesn't have the right to vote, even though she's been in this country for a very long time. We had a trans woman who's losing rights left and right here and there. We had made sure we just had like women who are immigrants, women who are American, you know, had different age groups and really wanted to have a wide topic of conversation. And all the work was very figurative. We felt that the figure really needed to be in that show, which is not how anyone would describe my own work. But it was a really, really great experience with just all those extra challenges that went into making it happen. So I would say those two are highlights because of the struggles. And I, you know, I guess that's the theme of our chat today is I enjoy to continue to learn and push myself. So those two kind of stand out because they were so challenging.
I think that's so beautiful. And also, I can't even imagine going through that during the height of the pandemic. I mean, that's like, yeah, I honestly can't even imagine. And as you're describing it, I'm like, yeah, it feels like the pandemic was a past life or some kind of strange dream at this point. Like, as you're talking about, I'm like, oh yeah, there's that thing that happened that I think we've like, I mean, this, not to digress too much, but it's like, we've kind of blocked out, but also I think we're still, many of us are navigating this post-pandemic reality. And I, yeah, as you're sharing your experience and just the logistics of hanging a show when there's social distancing in place and all of these regulations to follow, I'm sure it made you an even stronger curator, an even better curator, you know, because you're having to like problem solve left and right. And I can only imagine that something really beautiful and a really powerful exhibition was born from that. So, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Like I said, you know, challenges, they teach you things. So
they do 100%. And I always try and remind myself when you're in it and it's actually happening, try not to lose sight of that because you will later on look back and you'll see the silver lining and like, oh my gosh, I grew so much through that experience. You can try to remember that when it's actually happening, you know, that's helpful. Just knowing something beautiful will come out of it. But Christina, as we start to come to the end of what has been such an inspiring conversation, I wanted to ask if you have anything coming up that you'd like to share with our listeners this year, and also where our amazing listeners can learn more about you and your work as both a visual artist and a curator.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So you can easily find me on Instagram. My own artwork is at cmassyart on Instagram, and my curatorial Instagram is willwartblog. Woe is supposed to be like the sound woe, but spelled W-O for women. and it's not a traditional blog. It's like a visual blog through Instagram, but you can see all my curatorial projects there, as well as just art that I love and see. And I have an exhibit at the MoCA Long Island right now. It's a four-woman show called Eccentric Abstraction, and that will be up until June. And then I have a show actually opening this weekend, but it'll be up through May at the Map Space in Port Chester, New York, just outside of the city. I also have work at this big lobby, corporate lobby in Manhattan. It's 750 7th Avenue. Anyone can just walk in and see it. Some of my really large paintings that are there. So those are all up currently, and I will have open studios at my artist residency at Art Cake in June. So those are all the most recent things.
Those are big things. Congrats. It's so exciting. I mean, you know, following your journey on Instagram, getting to know you over the past year and just always seeing the amazing, like incredible things that you're doing. It's super inspiring. And I can't wait to continue following your journey. I mean, we're both in Brooklyn, so of course we'll stay in touch. And yeah, just thank you so much for joining me today. It's been such a pleasure to chat with you.
You too. Thank you so much.
Yes. And to our wonderful listeners, as always, thank you so much for tuning into another episode, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for tuning in and supporting our platform. To learn more about New Visionary Magazine, head over to visionaryartcollective.com/magazine. You can order individual copies on Amazon or subscribe annually to digital issues. We also have opportunities to get featured in the magazine, so be sure to join our newsletter and follow us on Instagram. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to leave a review on iTunes or tag us on Instagram. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.